Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Courtney.
I'm Joy Marie.
Welcome to Job Logs, Minnesota Edition.
Yes.
So we're just going to take a little short, quick session to kind of get you through the week. And we have a very special episode, a very special guest. I'll let Joy intro.
Yes. So today I got to interview my dad, which was amazing, for a special Father's Day episode. We talk about his career, some of his lessons for me, and his lessons to young professionals in general.
Yeah, he has such a fascinating career.
He does, and he's a bit of a talker. So I'll preface
Explain
that.
Some
but
much.
Yes, very excited. My biggest professional inspiration. So here's the interview.
Hi, Dad.
Hi, girl.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you.
I'm calling from Brooklyn, my apartment. Where are you right now?
Right now, I'm in Juba, South Sudan.
Well, thank you for doing this interview with me. This is fun because it's Father's Day, and I consider you, well, obviously you're my dad, but I also consider you my first professional mentor of sorts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I feel like I learned everything. Well, I learned a lot of professionalism from you, I would say.
Well, that's nice to hear. Thank you.
I feel like you've always been our dad, but, you know, Aaron and I, my brother, but you're also, like, very businesslike, too. Like, you send long emails to us, and you've always done that since we grew up, or lengthy text messages with lots of good vocabulary.
I've always felt that, writing or speaking is like cooking. You can throw in all sorts of ingredients, salt, water, you name it, whatever. But at the end of the day, it's got to taste well. So that's the way I write. That's the way I speak. And if you have a good command of the language, then you can alternate the way you do things.
Yeah, that's true. I'm glad we're talking. I wanted to talk with you because I think you've had an interesting career over the last 30-something years, I think, or probably beyond. And I know it's a field that's very interesting to a lot of people that are interested in humanitarian work as well. So tell us very briefly what you do, what has taken you to Juba, South Sudan, and how you got into the field, how you got interested in the first place.
Well, as you know, I work for the UN Refugee Agency. I've been with this agency for the past 22 years. But before that, I worked for the humanitarian agencies in Washington called AfriCare and another agency, World Vision International. So I did 11 and a half years before joining the UN, which I've been in for the past 22 years.
Wow. And that's and that was D.C., right? Would you say that you worked there by design? Because I know D.C. is kind of a big political, humanitarian, nonprofit hub.
Well, growing up as a child, I was always interested in development work, helping people. Even in high school, I used to participate in the Voluntary Work Camp Association of Ghana. Travel to the northern part of the country to help communities to build rural health centers and schools. But I didn't realize that that was what I was going to pursue in life until after undergraduate, when I came across a professor who happened to be my advisor, who, after talking to me, guided me in pursuing a career in humanitarian work and international development. When I arrived in the U.S., my desire was to pursue a career in diplomacy. and to go back and join the Foreign Service. But regrettably, in 1979, there was a coup d'etat in Ghana. In 1983, there was a coup d'etat.
And, Oh, really?
So I decided to pursue something else. So I did an undergraduate in international development studies. And then when my advisor at the University of Iowa, after I transitioned from Chicago to Iowa, directed me to pursue this career. So with all my earnest interest, I followed his guidance, and I'm glad I did.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so was he the one that kind of told you the blueprint of what to study as a master's degree? Because you did international disaster development? I forget the title of it, but you did that all the way in Vermont, I remember. And I think you told me about a program you did in Wisconsin as well. Was he the one that kind of guided you to those programs?
No, he basically told me about the School for International Training in Brattleboro, Vermont, which is located 2 hours from Boston. And so I followed through on that advice and ended up in that school where I did my undergraduate in International Development Administration. The emphasis was on international development. And after that course, I ended up in Washington, D.C., where I got a job with the NGO called AfriCare. AfriCare was an African-American established international humanitarian and development agency, which was involved at the time in food production, water resource development, healthcare, and refugee assistance in Africa. Whilst working for that organization, the UN in Geneva, the UN Refugee Agency, selected me and offered me an opportunity to participate in a disaster management training at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And this was in 1987. And
oh, so, okay, when I was born.
Yes. So after that study, I came back to continue my work with this humanitarian and development agency based in Washington for 4.5 years, essentially as a program manager responsible for the operations in Ethiopia, Somalia, and Kenya. So after doing that for 4.5 years, the organization actually appointed me as the director, the country director in Ethiopia. And so in 1988, I moved and went to live in Ethiopia. You were 1 year old. And and I continued doing that work, which had a lot of different sectors. We were building an irrigation project in a place called Waldia on the Gimbora River, and diverting the water into an agricultural land area for food production as part of the effort to reduce the impact of famine and drought, so that farmers in that river valley could produce food throughout the year. In addition to that, we were also building rural health centers in remote areas to provide access to villagers who would otherwise not have access to medical facilities. And then I also developed, in my capacity as a country director, proposals which got us funding from the UN Refugee Agency to drill boreholes at that time in 1988 in the Etan and Gambela Funido refugee camps for 240,000 Sudanese refugees.
Wow.
So it's I'm not surprised that after all these years, 1988, 89, 90, I'm now actually here in Juba, South Sudan, working for the UN Refugee Agency, so dealing with refugees and people who have returned from refuge in other parts of the country, in this country. It's a pleasure and an honor to be of service to these people.
Yeah, it's really amazing. How old were you when you worked with Africa and first moved to D.C.?
I must have been around 25, 26.
See, that's crazy to me because I'm 28 and I can't imagine uprooting my whole life and moving to a different country to do that kind of work.
Well, I was very driven with compassion. Remember that in 1984, 85, we had the severe drought and famine in Ethiopia and the East and the Horn of Africa. It was during that period that Michael Jackson and Bob Geldof and all the famous musicians came together and sang the song We Are the World to raise resources to mitigate some of the suffering. And so it was a period of tremendous challenge. And I guess my innate desire and passion were, were stirred up to an extent where I couldn't stop but be part of this global movement.
I think it's so easy, and I don't know if I can just speak for the U.S., but I'll speak about my experience at least, to get complacent and kind of forget that there's a larger world and be very focused on the issues that are domestic. And I think even with the media, the coverage that we get sometimes in the U.S. is just so focused on domestic issues that we forget that there's so many issues happening in the world around us. How throughout your career have you stayed connected to the causes that are important to you, you know, outside of wherever, whatever country you're residing in at that time?
Well, you know, the as I said, after the 7.5 years with that agency, I transitioned and joined World Vision International. And that's when we moved from the U.S. to Zambia to work with World Vision in Luapula province of Zambia, where, you know, I was a team leader for a community health and development project that was looking at the improvement of the health delivery system, looking at primary health care, training of community health workers, traditional bed attendants, AIDS education, health information systems, malaria prevention, nutrition, and then the family planning. And the third component was micro enterprise, women in development, income generating activities. These are major issues that a number of countries are confronted with. And so, given the length of my career over the years, I think that you are absolutely right. I no longer look at things from a narrow perspective. I have a global heart. I think it's important for us to reach out. But let me underscore the fact that even working for the UN Refugee Agency, we have a mandate to provide international protection to and material assistance to people in need. We do that by, promoting voluntary repatriation or local integration or resettlement. We are non-political, we are non-commercial, and we are non-military. So we have a very totally neutral position and mandate in the work we do.
You almost have to be connected to global issues and what's going on as a result of the work that you're doing. You have to be informed by what's happening around you in order to do your work effectively.
Yes.
Okay. So if, you know, for people who are listening who are interested in working at some of these competitive sort of international organizations like the UN, USAID, any number of these organizations, peacekeeping or otherwise, what piece of advice do you give to people who are, you know, younger, maybe where you were in your 20s, about entering that field? Because I know a lot of times it requires competitive graduate degrees, and then even with all of that, it can be tough to get in. And it sounds like you did a number of internships, but you also positioned yourself in places where you were exposed to. So, for instance, while you were at Africa and World Vision, I thought I heard you say that even in Ethiopia, you were working with the UN side by side. So you're forming these connections and building these relationships. But what advice do you have to people who aren't there yet who do want to enter the humanitarian space?
I think it's important, first and foremost, to have the passion for the work that one desires to pursue. Passion will sustain you. Emotions will fade away. So for me, the number one requirement is passion. And when you have that passion, then you have to have a sense of where you want to get to, how far you want to get to in the pursuit of that passion. It's not right now necessarily an easy field to get into because it's saturated and a number of people are extremely interested. So obviously it's going to be competitive. But no one should give up their passion simply because there is competition. If you keep working at it, and people should not overlook humble beginnings. I started as an intern for 6 months, and during my internship, that's when I learned how to eat bagels and cheese, because I did not have sufficient money to even afford a proper lunch, a proper meal. I was fortunate enough to have a family in the Washington area that gave me free accommodation and also transportation. So I was only paid $50 a week, and I made $200 a month, and that was only enough to sustain me in terms of my lunch. So all I'm saying is that where there is a will, there will always be a way. And for those who have the passion to pursue it, nothing should stop them from pursuing it, because there are still a number of opportunities in the field of humanitarian work and development work. And every hand that is interested in contributing to the search for solutions is welcome.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You know, you talk a lot about passion, and I think it's always admirable to people like me and the type of work that you do, being in the humanitarian field. It hasn't been something I've been interested in as of yet. But for people who are, who are drawn and driven to nonprofit humanitarian work, these passion-driven causes, social causes, what's the flip side that maybe people don't hear about as much that they also need to be equally prepared for? So, you're with the UN, but there are still accountants, there's still software engineers, there's still IT, there's still reporting and presentations that you have to work on, and written communications that you draft, memos. What are some other things maybe that people don't consider as they think about the field, apart from the passion for the cause?
We have all the various areas of employment within the international humanitarian and development arena. You can enter as an IT specialist, you can enter as an administrator, you can enter as a lawyer, someone with a legal background, and what have you. You can also enter with a degree in development and what have you. But I think if I were to look back, perhaps something that I would do differently, and let me put it in context. When I started my career, we moved from Washington to Ethiopia. As I said, you were 1 year old. Aaron was not born. He was born later on. And then we came back to the U.S., and then from the U.S. we moved to Zambia. And then from Zambia we came back to the U.S., and then we moved to Tanzania. From Tanzania back to the U.S., and then moved back to Ethiopia, and then Ethiopia back to the U.S., before Geneva back to the U.S., and then Geneva again, and from Geneva to this place in Juba, South Sudan. I think one of the things that I probably would have done differently is that you guys kept losing your friends, because you would make friends and then we will move and you will lose them. And if I were to do it all over again, I would either encourage those friends to come and visit you or you go visit them more often. Because later on, I realized that was one of the major tolls on you. You kept losing your very, very dear friends, and it was not easy for you guys. So that's one area I would consider. But whoever is interested in this career must equally be interested in rotation, moving from one camp to another, to another, to another.
Yeah, well, and, you know, to that point, what would you say was the most, you know, I think you've talked about kind of the reward and personal fulfillment side, but what would you say has been the most challenging aspect of your work?
I think the adjustment one has to make is that you come into an arena with people from different cultural backgrounds and blending that to be able to move forward harmoniously can sometimes be a challenge. But personally, I can say that because of the experience of growing up in Africa, witnessing the very complex nature of underdevelopment challenges, the excellent and proper educational preparation and background, and the transition from, humanitarian relief, emergency to development work. I personally have had really no major challenges as far as the work itself is concerned. You know, we most of the UN Refugee Agency in particular, and most of the national humanitarian and development agencies that I have worked with in the past depend almost exclusively on funding from outside, voluntary funding and contributions. So the challenge is when you have a situation where the caseload and the beneficiaries far outnumber the resources that are available, we have no choice but to provide the barest minimum. And that is what makes the job difficult, in the sense that when you're dealing with individuals who are in dire need and the resources are insufficient, inadequate, to provide them even with the basic necessities, there is no other choice but for them to live at the very minimum standards of survival. And those are the situations that sometimes bring tears and pain when we observe them. For instance, right now, we're dealing with a total of 60 million people who are in need that the UN Refugee Agency is taking care of. They include refugees, they include internally displaced persons, they include people who are stateless, and the resources are simply not enough. So you may go to a refugee camp where the standards and the quality of assistance may not necessarily be on par with other areas. But these are the things that sometimes can bring tears to our eyes and our hearts. Yeah,
I can imagine. So your work has afforded you a lot of travel. What's the most fascinating country you've ever visited or a refugee camp?
Well, it's interesting. I wouldn't use the word fascination or fascinated. I think I have learned over the years to feel at home wherever I am. And frankly, even the worst place that one has ever traveled to, after years, bring wonderful memories to my mind. So I really do not have any specific area that I would choose over another. It's been a tremendous opportunity that has been given to me to be a part of this global force that has been providing, humanitarian assistance and development assistance to many of the people who have been going through these difficult situations in life.
Yeah, and I think that's something that probably Aaron and I learned as well, moving around a lot, is I feel like, at least for myself, I can adapt to new places very easily, and no one space really truly feels too permanent or too much like home. It feels like I could kind of go anywhere at any time. So thanks for that. But to that point, I want to talk a little bit, it's Father's Day, I want to talk a little bit about how you've balanced your responsibilities, both in business and to your family, and what your parenting approach has been in raising children and influencing their career ambitions. Because we know that, parents or caregivers have a huge, huge impact on sort of the aspirations and just the people that their children become. So were you intentional at all about how you raised Aaron and I, and how the way that you would raise us would shape our career aspirations and ambitions?
Well, I was not necessarily intentional, but I think after years of wearing this global hat, it's become an integral part of me to get you guys to think globally as well. If you recall, when we were living in Luapula province in Zambia, you guys did not even, there was not a single school in the area that you could attend that spoke English. So Mom ended up beginning to teach you guys in the garage. We just put a board on the wall in the garage, and the two of you were her students, homeschooling. And then ultimately, the villagers came and peeped through the gate of the house, and Mom decided to open the doors of the gate and allow them to join you. And so before we left Zambia, we had roughly some 35 to 40 students that were ultimately... Are you there?
Is that your cell phone ringing?
It's not mine.
No, it's not mine either. It's obviously something on your side.
Oh, my goodness. It's mine. It's my phone. There's another phone, the office phone. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I don't remember that, though. You said 30, there were 30 other people that joined. I don't remember that.
Yeah, by the time, Mom, no, you started with about a few students, and then when you transitioned from that school to Sakeji, Mom continued that school without the two of you, because you and everyone went to Sakeji. Yeah. But when we were the born in Zambia, Mom handed over the school to the Catholic nuns.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Who were actually trying to persuade us to stay there and establish a school for the community.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. I didn't realize that. What do you always tell us? You tell us to put God first and that we can to always do the best that we can at everything that we try to do.
Yes, I think that I always told you guys that, you know, put God first in your life. And you see, I never restricted you guys. I always said, do what makes you happy in life. Because I believe that I wasn't one of those parents who said you have to be a lawyer or a doctor or what have you. You know, I believe that the greatest joy in life is to do something that you really love to do. And that has always been my principle. I so hold that dearly. You started out, you know, drawing things. You were always cute, always singing, always, you know, always happy, always full of joy. And so I knew that it was important for you to do things that made you happy. And similarly, that's what I told Aaron. But I knew that you have the potential and the capacity. Education prepares you to be ready for life. So it doesn't matter which field you are interested in and you pursue. The ultimate goal is to prepare you to be able to solve problems in life. And I think that you have excellent preparation. And with that, I believe you can do anything in this world, and the sky is the sea.
Yeah, I think that's why Aaron and I are both very kind of creative and entrepreneurial. I think it's, you know, looking back, I think it's always been that I've always felt free to do whatever. I haven't felt pressure from you or Mom to pursue any specific field. And I've always felt like you guys have always allowed us the room to fail at things as well. And to try things and not succeed or not do as well at them and not like them and move on to other things. So that's good.
Well, my advice to young people is whatever you do, make sure you have the passion for it. Do not go into something because of money, because you can have all the money in the world, but if you don't have the peace about what you're doing and enjoying it, you cannot take that money to Safeway or any of the stores and buy peace. Whatever you do, make a contribution to the world. There is a world out there that's suffering, that has excellent individuals, people who are just like you and I, but regrettably not as fortunate as you and I are because of the circumstances and the context they find themselves in. They are equally endowed with all the capacities in this life. And a little extension of a hand of assistance can transform the lives of some of these individuals. So whatever you do, think beyond your immediate environment, beyond your immediate community, and go beyond the boundaries of wherever you are and look out in this global world of ours and make a difference in the life of other individuals who are out there. It's a beautiful field, the field of international development, humanitarian assistance, and refugee work and on development. So all of you are invited, come in determined to make a difference in the life of someone.
All right.
right, guys. Hope you enjoyed that. My dad hates the internet and social media, so it was huge, huge, huge for him to do this.
Yeah.
But thanks. Love you much.
It was great. And you know what? In the spirit of the holiday, if you guys have any great career lessons you learned from your dad, share them with us at Job Blogs on the tweets and the Instas. Let us know.
Love it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.